Welcome. This is a very special Education Matters podcast, fans. It is our 30th podcast, and in commemoration of the very special 30th podcast, we're having our first podcast guest, Jillian Klein, join us again. Thank you, Jillian.
Yeah, how many fans do you have now? You had nine when I was here before.
I had zero, and now it is literally tens.
Tens.
Of fans.
Perfect.
I think we're like number 7,000 on iTunes in the education category. So we're, you know, every day. Every day is a few more. You're the first repeat guest.
Phew. That's a lot of pressure.
So Jillian was our first guest, mostly because Jillian is one of the people who works for me, and she couldn't say no.
Thank you.
And a guinea pig in this experiment. And we had a lot to talk about, right? We talked about financial aid policy. For those who didn't catch the first episode, Jillian, what is your title? Director of?
Public and Federal Aid Policy.
Yes. Basically, Jillian's in charge of making sure we're compliant in a lot of areas of financial aid policy and then being imaginative and helping us shape the policy environment going forward into the future. And so I showed up in her office this morning and I said, so we've got my very special 30th podcast and all of my fans are expecting something special. What should we talk about? And neither of us had a very good idea.
I wanted to talk about my kid. But
we can talk about your kid. You have a daughter, Penelope?
Yes.
How old is Penelope?
She's 19 months.
What are Penelope's likes and dislikes?
She is a toddler, so she pretty much dislikes everything all the time.
Yes.
Being in the stroller,
yep.
Having to stay inside, not getting her way. She's a toddler. But the good outweighs the bad, so we're keeping her for now.
Yeah. I have two daughters, 3 and 5, and we should probably do a podcast sometime where I just give parenting advice.
Okay.
I feel like that would be a good one. My tens of fans could send in their questions. And I could answer them.
That would be entertaining. And then you could have your daughters come and they could give their opinion.
That would be a disaster. I have one daughter, Julia, who's 5, and she's just incredible, and she's very smart. She's very introverted, and she'd be put out by the whole thing. And then I have a 3-year-old, Madeline, and she's wonderful and very not introverted, and she has a lot to say about everything, but it doesn't always make sense. And my listeners have come to expect a standard of quality that I don't know if Madeline could meet.
Maybe next year.
I don't know if she could clear that bar. All right, so you have a weird job that doesn't exist in a lot of universities. And so let's start kind of how you got here. You're from Colorado.
I am from Colorado, yep. Went to college in South Dakota at Augustana College in Sioux Falls.
Yeah.
Go Vikings.
Did you know that in high school or college I had a speech tournament in Augustana?
No kidding.
Yeah, so I was there. We ate dinner in the food court at the mall.
Excellent. Yeah. There's more to Sioux Falls.
How did you decide to go to Augustana from, you were living in Colorado Springs, right?
Mm-hmm.
Why Augustana?
I was looking mostly at Lutheran liberal arts colleges, so lots of schools in the Midwest. I really actually liked Sioux Falls and their food court, I'm sure, when I visited, and all the financial aid worked out in my favor, and so it became a great fit. I probably could have gone to a lot of other schools and had a great experience,
too. Did you look at Midland Lutheran in Fremont, Nebraska?
I didn't look at Nebraska.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, that's a bit of a blow.
Sorry about that.
All the good things in life come from Nebraska. One of my friends was the president there, but since you didn't try to go there, we'll move on. So you do Augustana. You graduate with a degree in?
Business, math, and religion.
3 majors. Mm. Oh, you're very ambitious. Yeah. Did you do it in 4 years?
I did.
Oh. My wife got 2 degrees. It took her 5 years, and I got 1 degree, and it took me 5 years.
It's okay.
Yeah.
It's a marathon, not a sprint.
That's right. That's what I told my parents. Okay, so you got all these degrees, and you have to pick. Obviously, you weren't going to have a career in math, because why would you do that? That sounds awful.
Yeah.
So it's business or religion. How did you just figure that out?
So I went to grad school right after I graduated from undergrad at Luther Seminary in St. Paul.
Yep.
And got my Master of Arts degree in systematic theology and started my PhD, and then decided that I needed to take a break from school and get a paycheck and health insurance and some vacation time.
Yep.
And so I took a job working at University of St. Thomas in St. Paul. It was really close to my apartment. As a financial aid counselor. That was my first sort of real job in financial aid. I had fallen into financial aid as a work study student when I was in grad school, which is a very common problem. People trip into financial aid and then they can't get out.
Yes. Let me go back. What is systematic theology?
My specific focus was around ethics, so thinking about how we understand good and evil and God and the world, so taking it sort of outside of the Bible and talking about it in a real-world context. And I thought for a while that I wanted to teach, and then I sort of moved away from that. And actually, the longer that I'm in sort of higher ed administration, the more I really like that side of it. So I am not sure that I'll ever really go back to thinking that I want to be a teacher. But
so I went to Creighton, and to get out of Creighton, you have to take 18 hours of theology and philosophy. And I was not at the point in my life where that was interesting to me, or I felt like a very good use of my time. And so I just got out, you know, I just slapped a few C's together and got out of there, at least that part of my degree. And the older I get, the more, I don't wish I could do it again, but the more interested I am in that and the more I pay attention and think about those kinds of things. How often in your life do you, I mean, everybody deals with questions about good and evil and kind of the big questions. How often do you use your study of systematic theology in your daily life?
I would actually say probably every day, because I feel like that work has helped me be a good thinker and try and see multiple sides of an issue or a story or an opportunity. And certainly there are the really relevant examples in terms of, like, so my field was ethics and thinking about things that you read in the paper every day or, you know, things you encounter. But I think from a broader perspective, it's helped me be just a better person and hopefully employee in terms of how I think.
Yep. Who are some of your favorite writers?
Well, that's a great question. Jürgen Moltmann is a great one. Do we really want to do this?
Yeah.
Paul Sponheim. I took some classes from him at Luther Seminary.
Okay.
He's probably one of my idols.
Paul Sponheim.
Yeah.
What makes him an idol?
He is a great thinker. I mean, I feel like I align a lot with his theology, and he was a great mentor to me, even when I didn't know what I was talking about, and he wasn't afraid to tell me that, which I feel like those are the people you learn the most from.
Yep. Yep. So you're at St. Thomas, you're a financial aid counselor. What I want to get to is you have this kind of depth of knowledge about financial aid policy. How did you develop that? Was it mostly here after you came to Capella, or was it at St. Thomas as a financial aid counselor and your progress there?
So I think it's a little bit of both. You know, I've worked now in traditional higher ed and now working at Capella, where we have a very non-traditional student base. And they're different parts of financial aid, right? So working at St. Thomas, we're largely undergrad, for example. Here, we're not. And so I think having both of those experiences, understanding what financial aid and sort of the ethos is like in traditional higher ed, traditional nonprofit higher ed, understanding what it's like at Capella, where we're non-traditional, super innovative, a for-profit education company, you learn different things. And I think having those experiences has helped me develop the skills that I use in my role now.
Yep. So let's talk about your role now. One of the things for which you're responsible for Capella is our partnership with the Department of Education and what they call Experimental Site Initiatives, ESIs. And it's another terribly named government thing. But it's actually a wonderful thing that they can do. They can create this kind of safe space for experimentation around really important policy questions. And we're doing one right now on how much students need to borrow above and beyond the cost of tuition. How does it work, and what are we learning from it?
Yep, so it's ESI 6. An even cooler name. Limiting overborrowing. We started participating in the experiment in 2013 with a pretty small sample size and have just sort of increased the number of learners that are in our experiment since then. And it's been really interesting, right? We still have a pretty small population compared to our total Capella population that's in the experiment, but we're seeing really great results in terms of how they're persisting, how they're graduating, what their borrowing trends are. They're obviously leaving Capella with less debt than they would otherwise, so that's an advantage. But we're not seeing that it's slowing them down in terms of how fast they're moving towards completion. They're not taking fewer courses. So I think we're really encouraged, and we're hoping that it's work that gets used on a broader scale to help inform maybe HEA reauthorization, maybe something else, to help give schools the authority to limit borrowing for some of their students.
What ability do we have in this experimental site that we don't otherwise have?
For the students in the experiment, we limit per quarter the amount that they can borrow by $500. So it's money that they normally would borrow for living expenses, as you mentioned, and we are reducing that by $2,000 a year, $500 a quarter.
And the implication would be if you give institutions more ability to have flexibility around award limitations, then they will better be able to help students borrow the appropriate amount for them and what they need to get through their education.
Right. I mean, I think believing that there's a one-size-fits-all answer for how much students should borrow or what their eligibility should be is the same as thinking that, you know, one size of education works for every student. And certainly schools and financial aid administrators best know their individual student situations. They know the details about a student's program, what costs may or may not be associated with it. And so why not give that authority to the schools where you know that they're going to make the most informed choices about how those funds get allocated to students.
Yep. So that's the one that we're in. We've been invited to participate in three others. And this is where it gets really exciting. Why don't you explain what those three are and what we would have, if all goes according to plan and we're able to fund the investment, what we would get out of those?
Yep. So they've all sort of been packaged together as competency-based education-related experiments. They were announced last year, and we are still in the process of talking to the Department of Education about what exactly our experiments will look like. But there are three that we are invited to participate in. One is around allowing students to borrow federal financial aid funds to help cover the costs of their prior learning assessment work that they do. So in a lot of cases, this is students who have this robust experience, a lot of times from a past employer or from work that they've done outside of Capella, and they want to see if they can get credit for it. And it's a pretty lengthy, involved, arduous portfolio process that goes into demonstrating that you have this knowledge that you otherwise would have learned in the courseroom. And we think that a lot of students don't take advantage of that because students have to pay for it out of pocket. Even though in the end they can get credits that will count towards their degree, they're not able to get federal financial aid for it. So the department has enabled schools in this experiment to test that exact hypothesis. Are more students taking advantage of PLA options? Are those students then more likely to graduate? Are they more likely to graduate quicker? Are they going to borrow less ultimately? And that's the one experiment that we're actually kicking off next month. So we have plans in place already to start after July 1st to move that experiment forward, which is really exciting. The two other experiments are more related at this point to our FlexPath program. So one is around the ability to allow students to take both FlexPath and traditional courses at the same time. So the way the rules are written right now, students in a direct assessment program can only be in their direct assessment program. They can't take a traditional course. So maybe you're a business major, you're really struggling with finance, you need some extra help in that course. This will give you the opportunity to actually take the traditional higher touch model, have more of that structured interaction with your faculty, weekly discussions, et cetera. So we're pretty excited about that. We think that it will really help students maybe not be as afraid of direct assessment because there's another opportunity for them to get additional help. And also, again, sort of open the doors to more students who may be interested in going that route. And then the third experiment is the competency-based education disbursement experiment.
Yes.
Which we call the complicated one here at Capella because it's complicated. But it essentially takes the financial aid that students are eligible for and it divides it into funds that cover direct costs, so things like tuition, and funds that cover indirect costs, which are living expenses. And it continues to disperse funds to cover living expenses based on time, so maybe once a quarter, once every 2 weeks, once a month. But then it disperses funds to cover your tuition charges based on when you demonstrate competencies in your coursework. So maybe that's just at the end of your course. Maybe that's at the end of each competency or at the end of an assessment. But it breaks it down to really sort of a pay-per-performance model.
Yep. And I think that one has, so it is the complicated one. It's going to be the hardest one to implement. And I think we're in the best position in the country to implement it, or at least one of the institutions is the best to implement it. And it's really important because it gives a picture of what a more rational financial aid system than the one we have today could be, where you decouple the cost of living from the cost of the actual learning that you're doing. And that really can unlock, I think, the potential for a financial aid system, which better supports people, especially adults, especially working adults or adults who have a lot going on in their lives, coming back to get their degrees. And these experimental sites are important because so much policymaking takes place in kind of a data-free environment. And this is creating evidence and data for what does and doesn't work. And that's why these matter. And so it's exciting to be a part of them.
Yeah, I think we're really excited to see not only what we learn in regards to what the department is interested in, but also just what we can learn about how our students behave in these experiments, what works best for our students. If there's something maybe we haven't thought about that all of a sudden we see as a need when we're in these experiments, I think there's great opportunity for Capella too.
So stay tuned on that, my listeners. let's go back to the fun stuff, because I'm worried that I lost all of my listeners during that conversation about ESIs. You don't own a TV.
No.
Why do you not own a TV?
Because we don't watch television in my house. I don't know. My husband and I started dating, and we were so busy doing, like, going to concerts and playing board games and whatever. We just didn't ever turn the television on. Yep. And so then it felt like it was taking up space in our house.
And now you're busy with a daughter.
We are.
Takes up time.
I know you're very concerned about me raising a child without television.
I am. It's true. But I also feel like, despite my comment earlier about parenting advice, it's best not to give parenting advice. And I think that there are ways you can fill the holes that people like me learn through watching television while their parents ignored them. You can do other ways, right? You can just teach kids stuff. Did you watch Mr. Rogers?
I did.
Okay.
Yeah.
You remember how he used to come in, he'd be in a suit, and then he'd put on a sweater, and he'd put on his shoes?
Yeah.
So as I was watching it, I would put on like a sport coat when I was like 4. I'd put on a sport coat at the beginning of the show, and as Fred Rogers changed out of his sport coat and into a sweater, I would change out of my sport coat and into a little brown sweater.
I love that.
And then I would take off my dress shoes, my little stupid penny loafers that my parents got for me, and I would put on tennis shoes, and then I would sit and watch Fred Rogers.
It's no wonder your wardrobe exiled.
Yeah, yeah. The land of make-believe. And yeah, I'm still like the only person at Capella in penny loafers and a blazer. Now we're in jeans. That's not fair. I apologize to all the people at Capella who don't wear jeans. They're more than just me. What's the book that you have read the most in your life?
Oh, the book that I've read the most?
Is it the Bible?
I mean, it probably is.
Okay, let me ask the question this way.
I don't have a good answer.
If you could take a book.
Is it books I've read to my children? Because
no.
child? Because I've read some of those 500 times.
I accept like the value of reading to your children. Not only do I accept it, I'm a passionate advocate of it. Some of these books are awful. Just awful. I hate them.
I feel badly because my kid loves Brown Bear, Brown Bear, What Do You See?
Sure, sure, sure.
It's the most boring book. I'm sorry, but it's so boring. And we read it 500 times a day.
I was able to, on that book, I had memorized it. And so we could be driving, and my daughter would ask me to read Brown Bear to her. And so I would just do it, and it made her happy. And we're past that now. We're into a little upper level books. You know, you'll get to know Mercy Watson. She's pretty good. It's a pig. If you're going on vacation, what kind of book would you bring with you?
Good question. I like biographies. I like historical fiction.
What's the best biography you've read?
Well, I liked Hillary Clinton's biography.
Interesting.
Because I think it's really fascinating to read about strong women.
Yes.
I really like reading about strong women who are successful.
Did you read Lean In?
No, I haven't.
Okay. I had a friend of mine, my friend Carly, and I can't remember we were talking about Lean In. And I haven't read it, and I don't have strong opinions, right, on it one way or the other. I'm not entirely sure what it's about, but I think I get it. But I started to say something about it, and she stopped me, and she said, stop. Don't talk to me about Lean In. It doesn't matter what you think about Lean In. It's not for you. And I thought that was very interesting.
Yeah.
So I'll do like a book panel, and we'll talk about Lean In, and all I will do is ask questions.
You should, after you and Pat do your music podcast.
Yeah. Pat and I are going to do a music podcast. I'm going to the Rolling Stones on Wednesday. After that, I'll do a review of the show, and then Pat and I will talk about other shows. And then someone will finally listen to the podcast and be like, why aren't you talking about education? We just talked about the experimental sites, which are really important. All right, what's your favorite place to eat in the Twin Cities?
I don't know. I like good Italian food, so Scusi in St. Paul. We like. My husband and I had our first date there. We like to go back there and celebrate our anniversary or whatnot. We don't go out to eat a lot these days because it's kind of hard to wrangle a kid.
Yeah, we were talking last night. We haven't seen a movie. I don't remember one. We've watched them at home, but we don't go out to movies. It was in the context of me trying to get my wife to go to the Entourage movie with me, and I don't know that I'm going to be able to pull that off. I don't know if I'm going to be able to get her to do that. All right, last question. If you could go to one concert, what would it be?
Dave Matthews. I've been to many Dave Matthews concerts, but I haven't been lately. I've been pregnant a lot during the summers, and so I haven't been able to go to Dave Matthews. But I probably have seen him a dozen times, and always puts on a great show, always entertaining. I always go with the same group of girlfriends, and it's kind of our thing.
I was kind of a music snob. I still am a little bit. But when Dave Matthews was at the height of his powers and his greatest popularity, I really didn't like it because, I don't know, I was just against whatever was popular. And my girlfriend at the time, Kristen Moore, she's married now, so I don't remember her last name, but she made me go to a Dave Matthews concert, and I really had an awful time. I ruined it for everybody.
Yeah. Perfect. Yeah. Maybe you should give it another try.
And Omar Rasky. I would be open to it. He has some songs that I really like. I was really into Bob Dylan, and he played All in the Watchtower, and I didn't approve of his version of it, and that really damaged my relationship to Dave Matthews.
Yeah, I can see that. I can see that. That's fair.
Yeah. But I respect, like, tour all the time, fun show. I get it. I get the joke. Yeah. All right. Anything else you wanted to cover off on this podcast?
Good.
Well, thank you for being my first return guest on my very special 30th episode.
Congratulations.
Thank you.